Brain Talk, episode 12, where our squawks will delve us into the world of privacy, gawk at RTP's privacy and tech tips, with a couple of scripts and an amazing chips. Gain control of your hardware and software, don't forget to share. Though it's rare, you could also add some flair.
I am Peter, your Linux phone and tablet procrastinator.
And I am Ezra, content creator who's released a game.
What?
I know.
But now, welcome to the 12th episode of Pine Talk,
the podcast for the Pine64 community by members of the Pine64 community.
In this episode, we'll be discussing a bunch of community news and some of your feedback and questions. Also, we're having another interview, as the poem hinted at. But first, what have we been up to lately?
Well, I've been taking nice walks in the forest, a pine forest, no less.
64?
A pine 64 forest. But more relevantly to me, I published my point-and-click fan game, Televoid Out of the Loop, available for both Microsoft Windows and Linux as an app image. It was very hard, and immediately after publishing it, or just around that time, there was a lot of crashes happening on Windows that were really hard to fix and was mostly due to my bad code, but it didn't crash on Linux, so, you know, who knows why that's happening. I plan on making
jokes on you, Windows.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, that's the thing. I don't use Windows, so I get other people to test it. It's very fun.
Yay.
Very fun experience.
Remote debugging. The best.
Remote debugging. But it's all compiled on Linux. Even the Windows version is compiled on Linux, which is pretty cool. Using Mingu and stuff. I plan on making a video about my experience working for 3 years on a fan game. Gosh. Even I can't believe it took that long. Did I mention it was made in my own game engine, in C? Yeah, it's pretty impressive, I know.
That's cool.
And of course, it is the game and the engine is completely free and open source. Brutal Moose, the creator of Televoid, the thing I'm making a fan game of, actually made a post on his blog about my game. Quite nice of him. I hope he enjoys the game as much as you do. What about you, Peter? What have you been up to?
Well, I played your game for a bit. Didn't have much time, so I only spent like some 45 minutes. And I am clueless to the backstory of the game because I don't know what this is a fan game to, if you know what I'm trying to say. But I liked it a lot and I enjoyed the visual and musical atmosphere. So, everybody, try it out. It's free. Will only eat your time.
If you need to, if you want more context, you can also check out Rudomus's show, Televoid, on his YouTube channel.
Ah, yeah.
Sadly, he doesn't have Odyssey, I don't
think. We should put a link to that in the show notes this time, I think.
Yes. Definitely.
Good. So I've been slacking off again. So I haven't done any new videos since June 1st. That's why I called myself a Linux phone and tablet procrastinator, because I've written a post about tablets. So new Linux on tablets. And well, with the PineTab not being available, it's a bit complicated, right? If you don't want to spend $600 on a crowdfund or something. But yeah, it's not too complicated that you shouldn't attempt it. So I focused on hardware in this first post. I hope to write more on the topic, but it's certainly going to take me some time because I want to do it right. And writing just about software in one giant post doesn't sound like a good idea, right? I would have to test, for example, Ubuntu Touch on a tablet for real to write about it, not just watch videos of other people using it, because then you don't notice where it's going wrong. But if you're looking for such a tablet, my post might be helpful. So I didn't go through all the used tablets out there that would be interesting. I just tried to outline what could work. Generally avoid locked bootloaders and stuff. I also hope that I will be able to go into how to tweak your Linux distro to make it work on a tablet in a later post. So if you're not going for a specialized UI, but instead want to make GNOME work on a tablet or Plasma desktop, how to do that would be interesting, I think. But that's way too much about me and my thoughts on tablets. And let's get to it now and start with the app of the episode. Now, this is, of course, about phone apps mostly. But this week, I'm going to talk about KDE Itinerary.
Ooh.
When I first heard of it, I was like, what is Itinerary? Because I didn't know the word, right? Because English is a second language for me. I hadn't heard that. But this is an app for phone desktop that describes itself as a digital travel assistant with a priority on protecting your privacy. And it is just that, with many nice features such as timeline view of a unified travel itinerary with automatic trip grouping. It supports train, bus, and flight bookings, as well as hotel, restaurant, event, and car rental reservations. It has boarding pass management. It supports ticket management for multi-traveler and multi-ticket bookings. And yeah, it does so via automatic booking data extraction from various input formats performed locally on your device. For example, I took a German railway ticket. Those are sent to you as PDF via email, and put that into Itinerary, and it read out that information of the ticket totally correctly, and I could have used it to travel like that. I didn't do that yet, but I look forward to do so this weekend, actually. It also has real-time delay and platform change information for trains, so that's certainly useful, and weather forecasts for destinations along your trip. But there's even more that I don't want to bore you with further. If you don't have a Pine phone or similar Linux phone, but an Android phone, and you're a Plasma user, you can use it too. So check it out. It's really cool, and if your regional transfer providers aren't supported yet, well, maybe take it as an opportunity to contribute.
Yeah. Well, you said that it has a priority on protecting your privacy. And as such, now it's time to talk security and privacy with RTP.
Hi, RTP, or Right to Privacy. How are you and who are you?
Hey, I'm doing well. I am RTP. I go by RTP on my video channel, my blog, and I am someone interested in Linux and privacy and, you know, InfoSec.
Okay, so informational security, right?
Exactly.
Good. So how did you get started with computing and Linux?
Well, actually, it started when I was in high school. There was a friend of mine in the punk rock scene, and he was really heavily into a lot of, I guess you'd say, the hacker community at that time. And I just thought some of the things that he was up to was really interesting. He was interested in phone technology as well. They used to make all kinds of different, you know, boxes that did all kinds of interesting things back then. And he got me into Unix and Linux. And since then, I've probably tried about 30 different Linux operating systems.
So you went down the DistroWatch rabbit hole.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I even tried Linux from scratch, where you compile everything from source code, and that was an adventure. You definitely learn a lot.
Yeah, I did that too, but it's like 15 years ago or something.
Yeah, it was a little while back. It's still around now.
I never did that again because it was like...
I didn't think I'd ever stressful. Want to do it again.
Great.
Too much.
Okay, so that's how you got started. And then what are you running now? What's your distro of choice?
I am running on my laptop. I'm running Hunix over Cubes. I also am running right now a Debian virtual machine for this call here. And it's pretty nice. It does a lot of peripheral isolation and multiple virtual machine isolation for different peripherals, network devices. Everything's isolated individually. And it's great for privacy and security. Hunix is a nice addition. It has a virtual machine gateway that acts as a Torified router. And the Hunix workstation is what the interface is that you work on. And it basically, you know, Torifies everything and also prevents IP MAC address leaks for the workstation if you set it up right.
Okay, cool. So you're not just talking IT security and privacy, you're living it.
Exactly. I think you got to practice what you preach, I guess.
That's the best way of doing it, but not exactly. Everybody does, so kudos to you. So when did you first hear of Pint 64 or the Pint phone or whatever it was that got you interested?
Well, what got me interested in Pint 64 was the Pint phone. The Pint phone is like a dream of mine ever since I started using Linux. It's literally the pinnacle of phones for me at this moment. I know that sounds huge, but it is a Linux phone that is a Linux phone. It's a full Linux system in a phone, and it's not an Android where you have, you know, the Android rooted or a custom Android image. You can do everything. You can carry a full Linux machine in your pocket, and I think the potential there is huge for all kinds of maker projects, and it's just something that got me interested in Pine 64. And from there, I now have the Pine Tab, which is also great. It's like a bigger one.
Yeah.
So that's what got me interested in Pine 64. And from there, I've just been sticking around. And I really think Pine 64 has a lot of potential to do some interesting things.
That's cool. So, I mean, you already said you've got a Pine phone and a Pine Tab, so you've got multiple devices. What's your favorite? I mean, I'm almost guessing it's the Pine phone, but maybe it's not.
You know, it's a tough one. The Pine phone is probably my favorite because it is able to do all the things that the Pine Tab can do and then a little more with the cellular. But then I also see the limitations with cellular. We're seeing a lot of times Pine phone seems to be almost blacklisted from certain carriers. I know everyone calls it a whitelisting, but I think it's really blacklisting when they're blocking the Pine phone specifically. And I guess I see, you know, the decentralized potential of, you know, LoRa and I love the built-in RTL SDR in the Pine Tab. So I think for radio and control screens, the Pine Tab works a little better just because it's a larger screen. And a lot of times you have to deal with very tiny buttons. I'm sure you can understand how frustrating that can be on the Pine phone.
Yeah.
And so really, it's a tough call, to be honest with you. I use them probably equally. And I use them for different things. I'll use the Pine Tab for all my SDR stuff. And I'll use, you know, the Pine phone. You can also remotely log in through SSH. And I don't know any other phones that can do something like that. So I don't know. I just really enjoy using, you know, scripting and different things to accomplish creative tasks. And it's really up to your imagination. You really can do anything that you can come up with, basically.
Okay, so... Yeah, I believe that too. I mean, within the constraints of the hardware, the possibilities are limitless, right? And SDR is a software-defined radio, right?
Yes, software-defined radio. And especially like playing with LoRa and stuff, you can, you can do a lot of the receiving and stuff, testing out different radio related tasks. And you can also pick up a lot of interesting things like, you know, even, you know, first responders and whatnot. And all of that is, at least in the USA, I mean, you have to check your local laws, but as long as it's not decrypting any radio communications, it's all completely legal to receive radio.
Yeah, that's cool. So I think you've been tinkering with that PineDO hardware too, right?
Yes.
So how do you like it, and what hopes do you have for LoRaWAN?
Well, it kind of goes back to what I mentioned about the limitations of relying on cellular providers. We're basically at their mercy with our communications. And when they decide to phase out 4G, I think there's going to be, you know, a need for another form of communication. And ideally, if we can come up with something that is more decentralized, of course, there's a lot of limitations within, you know, the LoRa, the Semtech LoRa protocol, packet size and, you know, transfer speed. But I think, you know, you can get a little creative and possibly, you know, mix it in with different types of networking, and you can really come up with something unique that's usable.
And LoRa could be good enough for encrypted text communication, right?
Yeah, exactly.
In this episode, later on, we are going to have a little segment on a device somebody built, not with Pine64 stuff, but I think that's going to be of interest then for you too, if you're going to listen to this later on.
Oh, for sure.
But let's go back to what you do and what you create. And so where do you get the ideas or inspiration for your videos?
Well, for me, the inspiration comes from, I try to put myself in other people's shoes, and you know, I look at the trends that are going on, and I try to look a little bit of further ahead in the future. You know, a lot of people say, you know, what's the point of privacy? There is no such thing as privacy. But, you know, they don't realize that all of this data is sold, is aggregated, is sold by data brokers. It goes into everything from the price of your health insurance to if you get that new job. And this could be something as simple as going hiking. That can affect your health insurance cost. There's a lot of reasons for privacy. And I try to put myself in the shoes of someone else and try to look a little bit ahead and try to see what's not been done on video before. So I just try to look for gaps in the tutorials out there, if I find any. And try to come up with something original where possible when it's ready for video.
Oh, that's pretty cool. You know, I always just pick something I'm interested in and do it.
I hear you on that. I do the same thing too. You got to fill in. You can't have a constant flow of new ideas all the time.
So when you then create a video, so what's your workflow? I mean, do you write long scripts? Do you plan scenes, or is it more spontaneous?
I do it more spontaneous. But I will say, and this is something I suggest everyone do no matter what they're doing, keep a notepad. And sometimes we'll get ideas for various things, whether it be a video, a blog post, or a script or a program. And a lot of times I notice I can forget these ideas if I don't jot them down right away. And if you keep a notepad, you'll have a large list of ideas to work from. So that's how I start. And then I basically plan a day around whatever topic it is I'm doing. And I usually don't have any script written at all. I just kind of go off the cuff. Then I just edit out all of my ums and ahs and all my, you know, moments where I don't want to be, you know, played back. So that's how I do it.
I get that. Sounds very much like how I'm doing it. For those that don't know your content yet, what is a video they should watch if they, for example, are PinePhone users?
I guess I would say take a look at the one on SSH that shows Hydra cracking the default passwords, and just take your, you know, your PIN number security seriously. I know a lot of users have SSH open. And I don't know if a lot of them know that on any local area network they ever connect to, whether it's public Wi-Fi, if you're at a coffee shop, anyone else at that coffee shop connected can SSH to your phone if your password's still 1234 or 123456. You might want to think about changing that. And that's one video that I would recommend just to PinePhone users, just to get an idea of how quick and easy it is if someone did have bad intentions.
That's good advice, because I mean, even some distros have SSH on and don't suggest you to change that default.
Exactly.
So if people want to follow your work, how can they best do that?
I would say the easiest thing to remember is odyssey.com/ and then the @ and RTP at that point. And you can find links to everything else in the description. So, and then also falstodon.com/RTP as well.
Good. So we're going to put links to all your content and to that SSH video into the show notes of this episode, of course. Thank you very much for coming on.
Thank you for having me.
And hopefully talk to you again one time or another.
Sounds good. It's been fun.
Thanks again to RTP for coming on. We will have all the important links in the show notes. But for now, let's continue with the community news.
Yeah, community news. The best news.
The best news. So please start it.
The first item of community news this episode is not really news, but a new project to keep your eyes on. PineRoot is a build root environment for PinePhone. Now, what is build root? It's a simple, efficient, and easy to use tool to generate embedded Linux systems through cross compilation. Quoting from the project page, a single make command produces your own image, which you can copy to microSD card and boot on PinePhone. PineRoot's default image boots to Wayland and starts LiTerm for you. They even include PineUI Qt Quick skeleton application as embedded Qt 5 demo for kickstarting your own developments. You can also utilize BuildRoot toolchain with Qt Curator for rapid in-device development. Their approach is simple, manageable, and embedded friendly thanks to BuildRoot. Yeah, these are many words. But they have a cool use case, and that is PineRooter. And we've put a link to that in the show notes too, which turns your PinePhone into an LTE root router appliance. So that's pretty cool, right? So if you're maybe feel that PinePhone isn't good enough as your daily driver yet, but you want to do something with it, and you've got a laptop that doesn't have LTE built in, maybe that's interesting to you.
Yeah.
I certainly recommend you to follow the project on Twitter, and we've included all relevant links into our show notes.
Next up, Brian Daniels talks about hardware accelerated video decoding on the PinePhone. As you may know, I always test video watching on various OSs and devices. I like to test that because I find it's a good test of what modern functionality a device or piece of software may have. And Brian Daniels blogged about hardware accelerated video decoding on the PinePhone, which was definitely a bit of an issue. The PinePhone, anyway, for me, got a bit hot when watching videos.
Yeah.
But now we saw video acceleration, which at least on most ARM systems on a chip is different from the general graphics acceleration, as this uses the VPU and not the GPU in use before when Marius from Germany got video chat in the Element web app to work. So we did see that happen. But this now is about playback, and you need to build GStreamer from Git Master and set a few environmental variables to get it working. What's great about using this address VPU is that it reduces the total CPU usage, so that it was 10-11%, and the GST Play 1.0 app was using 33% of one CPU, according to Top, as Brian writes.
Yeah, so you know me, I've been trying to confirm this. And it was actually quite easy, as Brian did this with Dank 12's Arch Linux ARM, which is what I'm running to, and I can't stop telling everyone about it.
Yeah, yeah, I run Arch, by the way.
By the way, it's a disease. Stay safe of it, people. Well, so I was trying to be smart at first, and I figured, well, let's just install the GStreamer Git and various packages like, for example, gst-plugins-bat-git from the AUR to get this done. But the Arch user repository is not really made for Arch Linux ARM, which is not part of the official Arch Linux project, and thus this would have required some adjustment to a number of package build scripts, because I ran into the issue that it wanted to compile or install binary packages of something Intel-related, which I was like, well, I don't need that. That's nonsensical on my PinePhone. I don't have so much space. These 32 gigabytes are almost full anyway. So, I could have adjusted those package build scripts, I'm sure, but I didn't have the time nor the brain capacity. So I went with Brian's instructions and decided to make sure that the Ninja install step would install this Git build to not to user local, but to /user instead. Don't do this at home. I will run into some funny override conflicts once GStreamer gets an update in Arch Linux ARM. I set myself up to fun there. But to make a long story short, GStreamer took quite a while to build, so it was actually more than an hour. It works. And his numbers check out. As described, and yeah, once GStreamer 1.20 will be released, which should be according to the GStreamer website in a few weeks, we all should be able to enjoy these improvements. But then GST Play is not really the video player for end users. You know, it has no UI whatsoever, no controls, nothing. So I hope that distributions or new media player projects will solve this video acceleration issue for all of us in a way that's better to use. But it's really impressive. So playing back 1080p video, H.264, I don't know about the frame rate, sadly, but it played back super smooth. Like 33% of one CPU core. I tried to play the same file in MPV, and it was at around, like, across those four CPUs in top, I was at, I don't know, 230% percent CPU usage, and it was still dropping frames. So, yeah, this is really cool. Using the hardware mm-hmm. that's made for this helps, mm-hmm. turns out.
Oh, yeah.
Surprising.
Oh, well, thank you, Brian Daniels, for taking the time
for educating us.
Yeah. So, next up, Infinitime 1.2.0. JF wasn't planning on releasing Infinitime 1.2.0 so soon, as many interesting features were in the works right now. But as was announced in Pine64's monthly update, the factory cannot source the accelerometers or the accelerometer BMA421 anymore. And as an alternative, they propose to use the BMA425 instead. This new sensor is very similar, but needed a few minor modifications to the driver, e.g., taking into account the new chip ID for the BMA425, for example. As the factory is waiting for a version of Infinitime that supports the BMA425, they decided to release the version as soon as possible. In addition to the added support for the BMA425, this new version brings one new app, many improvements, and bug fixes. The Metronome app was contributed by Britton Hall. It uses the vibrator to give the tempo to the user and provides a nice user interface to select the beats per minute, the beats per bar for creating an accent beat. The stopwatch app was also improved by Riku Izokowski. It now provides us a cleaner user interface. So thank you, Riku, for that. And thank you, Brighton, for the Metronome. This release also includes many behind-the-scenes developments, mostly focused on memory usage optimizations. JF did a detailed analysis of RAM and flash memory usage and has already implemented a few changes that reduce the size of the firmware from 420 kilobytes to 340 kilobytes about. And to reduce the RAM memory usage, they've also fixed a few bugs and implemented a few improvements in code cleaning. They're cleaning code and it makes things go vroom vroom very fast. It's just getting better. And, you know, they're doing good also, being on their toes and adding support to new drivers when hardware is no longer available.
Yeah.
Now, let's move on. Our last item of news, which is the wider community news, and is something for LoRa enthusiasts.
Yeah, we've not forgot about you, right? So on Hackaday.com, we found another story for LoRa enthusiasts among our listeners. So there's a GitHub project called OTG Messenger, which reuses the shell and keyboard of a Nokia E63, a non-touchscreen QWERTY BlackBerry-style 2008 Symbian smartphone to build a secure custom off-the-grid messenger. It works with self-healing mesh networking, which enables group communication over vast distances where devices, nodes, act as relay stations. So you don't need any infrastructure. These devices are the infrastructure. It's based on a custom four-layer PCB, which schematics sadly haven't been published yet. So please note, this does not use 0.64's LoRa equipment, but it's still quite interesting. It's based around the STM32H7 microcontroller, and this is an example of what awesome stuff you can do with, in today's terms, quite limited hardware. I think it's still super interesting to see this as an application, and we wonder whether something similar, maybe even compatible, could be achieved via PinePhone back cover or potential future 0.64 handheld hardware. But with that, let's move on to community engagement.
Yes, and let's start with listener feedback.
Whoa.
Undev wrote an email saying, "Hi, I was just listening to episode 6, caught up the rest shortly after, and heard your comments on Signal clients. It's been a little while since that episode, and the desktop app now works reasonably well on the PinePhone. Obviously, it's still not mobile optimized, but it is workable for daily use. The only caveat is that the building it is an in-depth process, even with the build scripts when they change things. So that sucks. I'm currently using it on Mobian and maintain a set of ARM64 build scripts I use to build my version at a GitLab link that we'll put in our show notes, Signal Desktop Builder. Just figured I should send the update through because so many people have Signal as their reason for not using the PinePhone as a daily driver. Thanks for the podcast. Each episode is better than the last. Regards, Undef. Thanks."
Yeah, thank you very much for that. I will definitely have to check it out. I tried it once, I think, to build Signal Desktop, but yeah, I gave up. It took forever and failed when I tried it, but I think his script might help with that.
Exactly. I don't use Signal, so I can't do much testing on my side. Perhaps I should, but no, I don't have a phone number either, so.
Yeah, and that makes it a bit tough.
Just a bit.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's really nice of you to have shared your building scripts here. You're really nice. I bet.
Totally. Sharing is caring.
Sharing is indeed caring.
And now let's go on with the listener questions. So we've got two new questions we're going to discuss, and they both are about potential products.
Mm-hmm.
So the first one was asked by Joke Rhyme, who's on mastodon.social.
I bet he likes my poems.
Jokey Rhyme, yeah. Sorry for butchering your name. We have a name butchering episode today.
Oh, yeah.
He or they ask, what would you like to see in a PinePhone 2 or PinePhone 2 Pro? Under what conditions, e.g. time frame, etc., would you think is a good time for such a device to be announced or released? Well, PinePhone 2 Pro? There isn't even a PinePhone Pro as of now, so I don't know what you're talking about there. Yeah. I mean, it's pretty clear from what we've read that a PinePhone 2 is rather likely to going to be based on the RK3566 system on a chip, unless things with that Quad 64 line of devices should go terribly wrong, right? So I think we can look forward to more RAM, 4 or even 8 gigabytes of RAM are possible with this chipset, and I would also consider similar form factor likely, as case molds are quite expensive, and with all these accessories that Pine 64 is working on, I doubt that they want to redo all of them after a short time. So accessory compatibility would be really nice and appreciated by both customers and I think themselves too, because then they don't have to test new keyboards again. Right, this has been taking quite a while already, and so it's not easy to get those accessories right. I would also expect to say that to see that Crectel EG25-G modem around. So that is something I think, unless Crectel stops making those, it will be in the PinePhone 2 as well. 5G, if at all, would be a feature for a hypothetical PinePhone 2 Pro or Pro 2, whatever. I think the benefits of this are clear. There's an open source firmware in development, which by then will likely be more ready for everybody. And it's a known piece of hardware, so bugs and stuff are known. They know how to put this on a board and make it working.
Mm-hmm.
Time frame. Component shortage, guys. So I wouldn't expect this before mid-2023 at the earliest. But of course, I would love to be proved wrong by an earlier release.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I think it's so fun how we need to use our creativity to work around the problem of limited hardware.
Yeah.
I also think, like you were saying, like we don't even have a PinePhone 1 Pro. We don't even have a PinePhone 1. Really.
It's just a PinePhone.
It's just a PinePhone. But like, you know, the hardware is sure pretty final, but like, can we at least get the software running before we jump like and abandon the, like, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's not done yet.
And part of that software work will start again. Like all this hardware enablement runs this system on a chip. Getting stuff like the not only the GPU to work, but then the VPU. That's going to take a while. Also for that RK3566,
mm-hmm.
which is still in early support. I think we talked about it last episode, so there's no way to get this play out right now, mm-hmm. if I'm not totally wrong. So, yeah, that wouldn't be great in a phone. So, even though they could design a board and put that chip on there and ship it, nobody would want a PinePhone 2, which doesn't show anything on your screen, right?
Mm-hmm.
That's no problem. You just SSH in, right?
Easy.
But Jokey Rhyme is not ready with, done with this question. There's also another line in his brief, or in their brief toot, and it's same questions for the PineBook/PineBook Pro. Well, okay. PineBook 2, likely same ship set as we said before. Time frame, I don't know. The PineBook was made before the PinePhone, so if history were to repeat itself, it might become a reality sooner than the PinePhone, but what would that be? Maybe late 2022?
Mm-hmm.
But with market forces at work in the component shortage and in general, would the demand for PinePhone 2 or PineBook 2 be larger? And then what would be easier to make, as in easier to source? I frankly have no idea when this would happen. I don't know. Maybe a laptop is easier than a phone, so it might happen earlier. But really, that's just a guess. PineBook 2, PineBook Pro 2, well, again, we don't really know. So a likely and awesome system on a chip would be Rockchip's 8 nanometer RK3588. You heard me correctly here. 3588, not 3566. If only they had different names. If that makes it to market sometime. So it's quite delayed already. Really unlikely to happen this year, I think. Maybe next year. But when? No idea. And I guess that Pine 64 would first release, or at least announce and release, a single board computer with that same chipset, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's, I think 2022 next year is optimistic. really optimistic. Maybe too optimistic. But then with that chip, which features 4 Cortex A76 and 4 Cortex A55 cores, more than 4 gigabytes of RAM would become a possibility. Other than that, from what I can gather, a touch improvement would be welcome. But that's all I can say or speculate here. You know, it might be totally different. These are just specs and we consider likely, and those specs determine when a time frame would be likely, and guessing time frames in 2021 has become really difficult. I mean, it's difficult anyway, but the supply problems just make it totally chaotic.
I think that was the right word to use. Chaotic.
Yeah.
Well, let's not think about that and move on to the next question.
Good idea.
Goldfinch at Fostodon asks a similar question. Guess we won't be moving away. what are some future products you guys would like to see from Pine64? I know you guys aren't big into LoRaWAN, so I was wondering if there is anything you guys would like to see in the future. Everyone wants a PinePhone Pro, so you can't say that. Love the show. Well, if we were to pick something like original, or if I were to pick something original that Pine 64 should make, it should be an AR VR headset. It'd be nice. It'd be really nice to have one that wasn't made by sucker bears, but you know, and it shouldn't be too hard either. I mean, I can do it. You know, it's just I don't have the time. But it would be it'd be interesting if they made something for software developers to experiment with. Otherwise, another thing I would personally really like to experiment with would be more RISC-V, more RISC-V things, products, just information. I don't know. I just have RISC-V stuff, man. It'd be really cool, I think, to experiment with that. Both of those things.
Something board ships RISC-V.
Yeah.
Sounds good. Now, I haven't been really gung-ho about LoRa, right? But I think still thinks that a LoRa communicator thing, like what we talked about earlier, that would be quite interesting and fun. Then, of course, PineTap 2 or PineTap Pro would be nice to see because, you know, writing that tablet post I wrote there for my blog made me appreciate the PineTap more because I figured, okay, yeah, I get it. There's really not much that you can't install Linux on, and there's not much at this price point that's somewhat decent. So yeah, PineTap 2, PineTap Pro would be nice to see, or just PineTap being available again. Then of course an e-reader, because e-readers, well, they are not made by sucker bears, but they are usually encumbered with tons of DRM, and it would be nice to have one that's proper made to run Linux, because we have pretty decent ebook apps already with stuff like KO Reader. And that would be interesting, at least to me, because I sometimes read. Then something I would like to see would be an upgrade board for the OG Pinebook with that chipset that's in the Quad 64, which we talked about earlier. Maybe even modular with that Silk Quartz compute module. That would be cool. And then, yeah, I went down that rabbit hole while I was thinking about that, because I really would like to see modular hardware that's user upgradable, environmentally friendly, and that would reduce e-waste, right?
Yeah.
I mean, there are others that do such stuff. Like, there's a German startup in Berlin that's called MNTMN. They do stuff like that with their Reform 2 laptop, which is, well, if you just look at the specs and the price, you're like, oh, that's super expensive. But then they are working on systems on a module so that you can upgrade this thing, like, I don't know, one with a rather similar but more powerful system on a chip, and then one with like an FPGA and stuff like that. So that's modular hardware is quite cool. There are other projects that tried that too, like EOMAR 68. I'm still waiting on hardware I ordered in August of 2016, by the way. If anybody at CrowdSupply listens to this, well, no, it's fine. I mean, I supported the idea. And if that ever arrives, that Orbiter A20 thing, I'm going to be really happy and make a video about it.
I hope you do.
But that's likely all I'm going to do with it, because it's going to be really slow. Yeah. Now, modularity, of course, introduces design challenges and thus cost. But I really would love to see Pine64 going into that direction a bit more. And so Quartz is definitely an excellent step into that direction, just as SoapPine and that other little board they had before that I can't think of right now were. So I really hope that's more is going to happen in that direction.
Yeah, I agree. I agree. Modularity is it's so cool. And like you say, they can reduce e-waste too.
Yeah, but then, I mean, even if it's not modular, something like upgrade boards,
mm-hmm.
so that you don't have to, when you're saying like, oh, the OG Pinebook with its 2 GB of RAM, it's obsolete, but it has this 1080p screen because there were a few units at least that had 1080p screens. So I would like to keep that and the keyboard. Well, it was fine. So if I only had a different board, I could use this a lot more. That would be cool.
Yeah, I agree. 100%.
I think that concludes our 12th episode. If you are subscribed to our MP3 feed, check out the chapter markers, right? These can be handy if you vaguely remember something we may have talked about and want to find it again quickly, or if you find a segment really boring and want to skip it.
If you don't need these chapter markers, save some bandwidth and use Peter's beloved Opus version. Once more, a huge thanks to NerdZoom Media for being our awesome audio producers. Thank you.
And that's it for this episode. Thank you for listening, and we'll be back in 2 weeks.
Remember, this is a community podcast, so please leave your feedback on what we should do better, get your suggestions in, and feel free to ask questions. We are really close to running out of questions, as always. We have some left, but answering them is basically a full episode. So if you have any little things you'd like to know about or just know our opinions on, please do.
You can join the Discord channel pinetalk-podcast on Pint64's Discord. You can send us an email at pinetalk@pint64.org and tweet at us. We are at TalkPine. We've joined Mastodon a while ago, and it's great to ask us questions, as many people have been doing. We're at talkpine@fostodon.org. If you can't remember these names, just use the hashtag AskPineTalk also. And this is no longer new, but still way underused. We now have a thread for feedback and questions on the Pint64 forums. Please post your questions there. It's in the community section and will be linked in the show notes of this episode. Bye-bye.